नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। टुडे वी विल रीड फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो फर्स्ट चैप्टर 15, दैट इज पांडवास रिटायर्ड टाइमली, द टेक्स्ट नंबर 5। अर्जुन उवाच, वञ्चितोऽहं महाराज, हरिणा बन्धरूपिणा, येन मे अपहृतं तेजो, देवविस्मापनं महः। एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद, ट्रांसलेशन। Arjuna said, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, who treated me exactly like an intimate friend, has left me alone. Thus, my astounding power, which astonished even the demigods, is no longer with me. In Bhagavad Gita 10.41, the Lord says, anyone specifically powerful and opulent in wealth, strength, beauty, knowledge, and all that is materially desirable, is to be considered but a product of insignificant portion of my complete whole of my energy. No one, therefore, can be independently powerful in any measure without being endowed by the Lord. When the Lord descends on the earth along with his eternal, ever-liberated associates, he not only displays his divine energy possessed by him, but also empowers his associate devotees with the required energy to execute his mission of incarnation. It's also stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4.5 that the Lord and his eternal associates descend on the earth many times. But the Lord remembers all the different roles of incarnations, whereas the associates by the His Supreme Will forget them. Similarly, the Lord takes away with Him all His associates when He disappears from the earth. The power and energy which were bestowed upon Arjuna were required for the fulfillment of the mission of the Lord. But when His mission was fulfilled, the emergency powers were withdrawn from Arjuna because the astounding powers of Arjuna, which were astonishing even the denizens of heaven, were no longer required. And they were not meant for going back home, back to Godhead. If empowerment of powers and withdrawal of powers by the Lord are possible even for a great devotee like Arjuna or even the demigods in heaven, then what to speak of ordinary living beings who are but fixed compared to such great souls? The lesson is, therefore, that no one should be puffed up for his powers bestowed from the Lord. The sane man should rather feel obliged to the Lord for such benefactions and must utilize such powers for the service of the Lord. Such powers can be withdrawn at any time by the Lord, so the best use of such powers and opulence is to engage them in the service of the Lord. So today we have chosen this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. A little bit history of this verse is such that Kurukshetra war gets over and Yudhishthira Maharaj was ruling the kingdom. Then Arjuna has gone to Dwarka to see Lord Krishna, but he doesn't come back for quite some time. And Yudhishthira Maharaj starts observing bad omens, and ultimately Arjun comes back and reply to the questions asked by Yudhishthira Maharaj. Arjuna speaks this verse, which is one of the very important verses, and we can learn a lot from this verse. The main gist of this verse is such, where Arjuna is remembering that how he was empowered by Lord Sri Krishna. So what we can learn from this verse is that when Arjuna, who did such miraculous tasks, he even astonished the demigods, he is humbly accepting that all these powers were bestowed upon me by the Lord. And when those powers, the purpose for which the powers were given was over, they were withdrawn. So Arjuna was not taking pride in the fact that he is the controller. If you see, this material world is exactly divided between the two mentalities. One mentality is that of a devotee who has firm faith that Krishna is the controller. And whenever he works in this material world, any duty that he performs in this material world is done with detachment. And for sake of purification, he works. Whereas a non-devotee, what is his mentality? How he works? He has firm faith that he is the doer, he is the controller. Not only that, he feels that he is independently controller of all events in his life. So all the activities he performs, they are done with attachment, and the goal of these activities is to attain sense gratification. So these are the clear-cut division we find in this material world. So the person who doesn't have this proper knowledge would always concludes wrongly, thinking himself as a doer of all his activities. And not only he thinks himself as a doer, at the same time he feels that he can control all events that are happening in his life with his own powers and wisdom. So let us see that how this illusion, which we always hear, that when living entity is under the spell of false ego, this is how he acts, this is how he behaves, this is how he speaks. He himself starts thinking of the control of all the activities. And we see in this material world that many people suffer from this kind of mentality. And it's not only that the materialistic person suffers this way. Sometimes, unconsciously, even devotee also suffers from the false ego. So let us see practically how this false ego works, how it bewilders a spirit soul. And typically, the proud person behaves like this. So what's the attitude of a person who suffers from the disease of pride or false ego? His main attitude is that he has a firm faith that they are born to rule this world. He feels such a way that I am the greatest and I can control the events in the life. And sometimes when we are in close contact with some proud person, we can see how he feels himself that he is the greatest attraction of the whole universe. That's how his main speaking way of behaving will be like that. So whenever somebody thinks that he is a superior, the natural consequence will be he will always look down upon others. So whenever this person who is suffering from ego, like ordinary materialistic common man, whenever they speak, we can easily see how they always want to point out that how others are fools and useless. And a simple day-to-day conversation we can see, we have seen many times the people say, oh, why this thing is given to him? Now he is such a useless person, just give it to me and I will show you how I can give you the results. So when somebody is having this mentality, he will naturally always situate that others are put down And his thing is that he is the main controller. And we can see, like, few days back we celebrated Ram Navami. So in the pages of Ramayana, we can see how Ravana, who represents the greed, false pride, and lust. So one incident we can see that when Ravana's sister, Suparnakha, when she saw Lord Ram, who is all attractive, charming, she immediately attracts attachment for him and wants that I should possess him. And then she starts speaking to him, saying that first Lord Ram introduces himself, like, I am such and such, I am a son of Dasharath, and this is my brother Lakshman, this is my wife, she is a princess of Videha. And he also explains that how to satisfy Kaikeyi, his stepmother, he has accepted the life of renunciate, and 14 years he'll be just wandering in the forest. And after that he inquires, so who are you? It appears that you are a demoness who can change the form at her own will. Then Shukmanaka starts describing her dynasty. She says that I am sister of Ravana, and I feel that you must have heard his name because he's so famous. And he is son of Vishrava, and you also must have heard his name also because he's also very, very famous personality. And then she goes on describing the power of Ravana. Then she says, I have another brother who is Kumbhakarna, and he is also extremely powerful. But at the same time, he has excessive sleep, so he sleeps a lot. And then I have another brother, is a Bibhishan, but he doesn't have any qualities of Rakshasams. He's a pious-minded person. And the next statement she makes it is, but I am more powerful than any of them. So as far as the valor is concerned, I'm powerful than Ravana, I'm powerful than Kumbhakarna also. So this is a typical nature of a materialistic person who would always thinking that he is the greatest, he is the attraction of the whole universe. And while establishing this fact, it's natural consequence that he will criticize others. And he will try to prove that how others are fools or useless. So in this one statement, she made it very clear that how the egoistic person works. And if you see, like, what was Ram's quality? Ram had such a charming face. And he had a beautiful bodily features. His eyes were long, that of a lotus petal. At the same time, even though he was in the dress of renunciate, he had beautiful mass of hair. It was round-shaped. And so much description is mentioned about Lord Ram. He was of a right conduct and attracting everybody. Whereas Suparnakha, she had ugly face, large belly, and deformed eyes. Her hairs were coppery, and her presence was just repelling. It was not that she could attract the people, it was just repels the people. And her conduct was also a vile conduct. But she was thinking that she is the perfect consort for Lord Ram. Though, materially speaking, there is absolutely no match. But she was trying to convince Lord Ram that how Mother Sita is not suitable for you, whereas she would be the perfect match, and together they will be able to enjoy. So this is how we will find that when we have an ego in the heart, this is how typically we will behave. So we may not have average capacities or less capacities, but still now we feel that we are the greatest. And anybody can see that it's just a hollow show. There's nothing, no substance inside. And they will talk of big things. Just like in the same Ramayana, we find that Lakshmana lops off the nose and ears of Suparnaka. Then she goes nearest her brothers, Khara and Dushan, and she narrates the whole thing. And then Khara sends about 14,000 Rakshasas to kill Ram and Lakshman. But Lord Ram, within less than 1.5 hours, just kills all of them single-handedly. And then when that news comes to him, he gets annoyed. But then how he starts boasting himself? He says that now I will personally go and I will kill this Ram, who is just a mere human being. And then he starts boasting himself about his progress and so many things. And as he starts proceeding towards Lord Ram, where he was staying, now he could see there were so many bad omens which were indicative of his defeat. And he also realized that all these bad omens means there is something wrong is going to happen. But still what he starts saying, that I don't care for these bad omens. I have so much power. With my arrows, I can even shoot the stars down. So this is how he starts boasting. And then he says that even death is afraid of me. So what happens is that person is completely loses the reality. Where is the evidence in the history where any person, any mortal person, has avoided the death? Demons may have very, very extraordinary powers, but still nobody could defeat the death. But still, he was thinking, I could avoid the death also. And I have so much of power that with my one arrow, even the stars in the sky will fall down. So this is what ego makes you believe, that you are the greatest and you have so many extraordinary powers. And then we see when Srila Prabhupada was publishing BTG in the very early days in 1950s and all that. So in that he writes about the how people feel that death may not soon come upon them. And then he was saying that some of them are so learned that they have a big post, and that they are even chairmen of planning commission. They plan for the nations, and they have so many big degrees. At the same time, recently in those days, as a famous scientist had heart attack and he died. So he says, you may have so much of material qualifications, but death doesn't discriminate. It doesn't see whether you are powerful, whether you are educated, rich, poor. Everybody, when the time comes, has to simply surrender and go. Then he was saying there's one famous doctor who would help so many other people. But when he was traveling by train, he became sick. And he died on the train itself. Though he could cure diseases, like incurable diseases for many people, at the same time, when the time came for him, there was no medical facility available for him. We have seen even a few years back that there was a very famous surgeon in Bombay, now,
who was so famous that everybody would go to him for heart operations. And then when he himself had some pain in the heart, he could immediately detect that I am getting heart attack. So immediately he told his subordinates that this is the prescription for me. You give me this medicine, do this things. But by the time he reached the hospital, he was no more. So the thing is that you may have so much expertise, and unfortunately he died with the same disease in which he had super speciality. So even though he knew exactly what was happening, but when the death came, he knew what's happening. He had all his able assistants, competent people. But before the death, nobody can succeed. So the person, when he has this attitude of he's the greatest, he generally speaks like this. When we are talking to this type of common people, we can understand that how they always want to prove themselves that they're the great. Oh, even though they may have a very, very average capacities. And another thing that happens, that when there is an ego in our heart, if there is a failure in the life, which is always there, we either collapse totally or we try to take the revenge. We have seen in this case of Suparnakha, her desire was to get Lord Ram as her husband, but somehow or other she failed in her attempt. She couldn't fulfill her desire. So she was not able to digest that failure in the life. What she does, she goes to Ravana and tries to instigate lust in the heart of Ravana. And what she was saying, first she says that how you are a king and you are simply enjoying your life. The danger has come upon and you have no awareness of it. And then she starts saying, because she knew the weakness of Ravana. Ravana can easily come upon the sway of lust. So what she says, she starts describing the beauty of Mother Sita. And then she says that actually I wanted to get Sita as your wife. But then Lakshman came between and that cruel person cut off my nose and ears. Of course, she didn't say that her intention was different. But Ravana would have got on her to case that we are from the dynasty of Rakshasas and how you could go after a human being. But just concealing those facts, she wanted to take revenge upon the insult. So she tries to get the revenge on that and tells Ravana, and then immediately Ravana also gets that desire to have Mother Sita. You have seen even in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the case of Haridas Thakur. So what was his greatness and wealth was renunciation. And one envious person in the village, who was a landlord, wealthy person, he just couldn't tolerate that I failed to get what this Haridas Thakur has. He has a recognition. I have so much wealth, so many things, but this Haridas Thakur doesn't have anything. But still, all people are after him. They give him a lot of respect. They follow him. And nobody cares for me. So just this failure to get the respect, now he tries to devise his evil plan and tries to send some prostitutes to tarnish the character of Haridas Thakur. So any person will say, the common person will always be like this. Because he has such an ego, he wants everything for his own enjoyment, and when his attempts fail, he will try to take hard revenge upon it. And that's why we find this material world is there's so many quarrels goes on or small things. Why? Because the disease of a false ego, when we meet failure in the life, we just can't cope up with it. And naturally, it will lead us to either totally collapse or try to take the revenge. And then what happens is, if you try to just reason with these people, reason with a person having false pride in the heart, try to give him any good advice, or if there is a slight criticism, these people just can't take it. They feel so greatly offended or insulted. That's why we find that many times, even in this material world, even the best friend tries to give some advice, tries to point out his shortcomings. But then people get offended, or sometimes they feel insulted. So what happens is, a person with the false pride can never imbibe good qualities from others. That is the main drawback, that when we have false ego in our heart, it's practically next to impossible to imbibe what's good in others. When you feel yourself the great, where is the question you can learn from others? There's absolutely no question that you can take that much humble position. That's how, like we have seen in this same Ramayana, when Ravana goes to Marichi and seeks his help to his evil plans, Marichi tries to give him reasons, tries to give him good advice. He tells him, look, Lord Ram is so much powerful. I personally have experience of it. It's not that I am saying something which I have heard, but I have personal experience. And he is such a great soft-hearted person, is such a knowledgeable person. He has controlled his senses. He is very pious. And then he has unfailing powers. His strength is unfailing. It will not fail. And then he starts narrating that how he himself, when Lord Ram was not even 12 years of old, that time he goes with Vishwamitra Muni, and Lord Ram was guarding the Yajna, and this time Maricha comes to destroy the Yajna. That time, with one arrow, Lord Ram throws this Marichi about 800 miles inside the deep ocean. And then he remains unconscious for a long time in that, and somehow or other he comes back to senses. And that's the time he realizes the strength of Lord Ram. And then after some time, when he hears that Lord Ram is now wandering the forest as a renunciate, then again his itch comes, and again he tries to attack along with his two companions. So this time Lord Ram again shoots three arrows. His companion immediately drops dead, and he starts running back. But then what happens is, glory of Lord Ram's arrow is it never kills a person who is running away. So that's how his life gets saved. And then he says that because of that experience, I'm so fearful of Lord Ram that whenever in the forest I see the tea box, I feel as if Lord Ram is there. So all the trees in the forest appears to me like Lord Ram. So daytime I'm always in fearful, is this Lord Ram? Night time also I always get dreams that Lord Ram is coming. Or somebody, even if the utters the word with the name R, is it like a Ratna or Ratha, I immediately become panicked. He says, I am so much of fearful of Lord Ram. And we can see the advice of Marichi was useful, it was appropriate and reasonable. But still, because of pride in the heart, Lord Ram could not accept that. He started Ravana could not accept that, and he started saying back that you give advice if I ask for you. Otherwise, there is no need for you to give any advice to me. I know what is good, what is bad. I have thought of it. And your advice is ill-conceived. And it's so useless. Like if somebody throws seeds on a barren field, what is the use of that? Tree will not come. It will not fructify. So you are giving advice to me. I am not going to take your advice. So your advice is, your attempts are useless. So don't even make an attempt to tell me these things. Now we can see these things happening even in Krishna Leela. Like Shishupal is there. He also always was trying to find faults with Lord Krishna. The Lord Krishna is described in the Vedic literature that Anantashesh, with his thousands of mouth, he is narrating the virtues of Supreme Personality of Godhead, and still it has not come to an end. So somebody who is just reservoir ocean of all good qualities, but if there is a pride in the heart, you can't even see one single thing in there. Only thing the minds of Shishupal was thinking is a bad qualities or so many so-called shortcomings of Lord Krishna. So this is what happens typically, that whenever the pride comes in our heart, it's very hard for us to learn anything from others. And then next step that will happen is that we will go away from the realities. We have seen that when the ego comes in the heart, our intelligence cannot think rationally. We cannot see what's good, what's wrong. And this pride takes possession of us so much that we don't even care about the results. Rather, we don't even think about it. What would be the consequence of my actions? We simply just do that thing. Ravana was just possessed of that desire to get. He was not caring for the results. He was not ready to even think about it, what's going to happen, and completely goes away from the reality. And you will find such a person is always surrounded by all yes-men. Because they don't want to hear any good advice. So he will go at all those local class of people who are simply interested to get something out of him. They are not interested what is good for him. They are simply interested what is their benefit, what they can get out of that person. And that's why you will have always friends who will not be your true well-wishers. They won't give you the advice. They will never tell you what's your real capacity, what's your mistakes. Nobody will tell them. Because you have made the situation around you such that you yourself have blocked your progress. Because you are not interested to take any good qualities from others. You simply want advice from a person who agrees with you. So the person who is your friend, like so-called friend, he is simply interested to see what I get from him. And we see this typically happens when Lord Ram, along with the monkeys, he makes the bridge. And when Ravana understands, so now the fight is unavoidable. We have to prepare for the fight, because he never thought that anybody would even take that much of courage to attack such a strong fort like Lanka. So he was in his own world, but when he faces the reality, no, the bridge is constructed, and now we have to go for war. Then he calls all his ministers and tries to, he gives more big speech that when the calamity comes, it's a person who can overcome the calamity is the one who takes the advice from his friends and takes a good counseling and then acts according to that counsel. But actually the fact was, he simply wanted to hear what he wanted to hear. He was not really interested in a true advice. So what were his ministers? Now his ministers tried to praise Ravana, saying that how in the past he did so many great things, this and that. And actually what had happened is, Hanuman comes to Lanka, he destroys so many things, kills so many Rakshasas, burns the whole thing and goes away. But still, that doesn't open their eyes. So one of his chief commander-in-chief, Prahastha, how he speaks. He says that, of course, they couldn't deny that fact that Hanuman came and did so much of damage. But then they say, when he came, we're not prepared, we're not suspecting, we never had that thing in the mind. And where, because of that, he could do so much damage. But at present, we are very well prepared. We have so many weapons. And then he says, why you need to worry? He says that in the past, how you went to Nagalokas and defeated them, how you went to Mount Kailash and defeated Kuvera, snatched his Pushpak airplane. Then he says that how you defeated Danvas, and that's how you got your dear wife, Mandodari. And then you defeated so many other demons. So he said that when you have such a good track record, so why do you worry in this battle? Now you have such a good credits to your account. And he said that even there is no need for you to go. I have so much of powers that I will sweep this whole globe. Even the oceans, the mountains, all the plains, and I won't leave a single monkey alive. Now such was his boastings. And his minister started saying, if this monkey tries to hide in the bottom of the ocean, or in the caves in the mountains, or they go to Rasatala, or if they go to heavenly planets, I will go after them and kill them. So this is how every minister gives advice what Ravana wanted to listen. So this is how we can say that pride completely blocks your progress. Even though he had a brother like Bibhishan, who was a pure devotee of the Lord, he tried to give some counsel, but Ravana completely shunned him. He didn't even listen to what he was saying. So we see this is the typical way it happens to us when there is a pride in the heart. We ourselves will block our own progress because there is no way we can learn from others, no way we can take good counsel from others. But what causes this? Like how this, the pride comes in the heart. Like suppose we do a small activity and when we get undeserving false praise, then that boosts our pride in the heart. That act may be very simple and small, but your friends and relatives and father and mother, they glorify you so much, and then you believe that you're the great person with the great capabilities. And what is the reverse of this is, now sometimes the parents, when they're dealing with their children, or sometimes a leader dealing with his juniors, if they praise too much undeserving, that leads to a pride in the heart of either to children or to the subordinates. Or if for a small thing, if they chastise him heavily, that results into inferior complex. So we have to see how we have to just appreciate, at the same time do not go away from the reality. Both the things are bad. If you take too much heavy action, that will completely result into inferior complex, which results in the loss of confidence. Whereas you praise too much unrealistic way, instead of genuine appreciation, what will happen is it just boosts up the ego. So that's why that we had to see that in life, when there is a happiness, is that happiness of success within our limits? Or we have to see whether the happiness of success is there when we see others, do we see others with contempt? When we see others with the contempt means, you know, we have this feeling that I am the greatest, I am the independent control of events in the life. Or many times we see so many people, they have the habit of boasting their own achievements. So do also I keep boasting my own achievements? If I am doing that, then definitely I am suffering from this disease of ego. Or do I learn from others' success and failures? If I am not ready to listen from others' success and failures, means there is a tremendous false ego in my heart. So it's not that false ego comes when there is a demonic mentality. The false ego can come to a pious people's mind also. As we know, that there is one small thing like that the Brahmanas, they perform the Gayatris, and those who follow the Samatha tradition, that they have so many rules and regulations, the exact time and so many things. So one such Brahmana would always perform the Gayatris on perfect time with perfect rituals. So one day he was taking rest and time for Gayatri was going. So one person comes, wakes him up. He immediately understands, oh, it's time for Gayatri, immediately performs his Gayatri. But then he says that, oh, who was that person who woke me up? Otherwise I would have missed the Gayatri. Because he had a record of performing all the Gayatris on time. Never once in his life had missed Gayatris on time. With perfection, he had done these things. So he asked that person, oh, who are you? So that person says, I am Kali personified. I said, oh, you are Kali personified? Then why you woke me up? He says that, because I knew you have that pride in the heart that I am the person who has performed Gayatris right on time every day. And so long as the people have this pride in the heart, my work is easy. So if I had not woken you up, you would have become humble. And then you would have got out of my net. But now, by this, I could keep you in my net. So this is how one has to say that how we can guard ourselves from this. There's another yogi who was once walking on the street, and another person came, maybe crazy or not crazy, but he just would started beating him. So he kept walking and walking and walking for quite some time, and this fellow kept behind beating and beating. And then what happens is, this yogi says, you will not get what you are looking for. He says, I don't have ego. So you may beat me so much times, but because I don't have ego, you will not get what you are looking for. But this man replies, still you have an ego of having no ego. So that's why you are not successful. You still feel that I have no ego, but that's also ego. So that's how one has to see that how this ego works very, very subtle way. It's not that you have to be gross, materialistic, And then we may be having these things. But ego is so subtle that it can crop up even in pious activities also. Even if you are thinking that I have no ego. But that also can be one of your egos. So that's why we have chosen this particular verse, which is very, very important for us in our life to understand that whatever good things we are able to do in this world is because the empowerment given to us by the Supreme Lord. It's not our own intelligence, our own power, our own wealth. So the devotee has this understanding that whatever I am doing, I have to depend on the empowerment of others, empowerment by the Supreme Lord. And without his empowerment, I cannot do anything. And that's why the pride doesn't result in the hearts of pure devotee. Now, what was the consciousness of Arjun here? He starts lamenting about that Lord Sri Krishna has gone back to his own abode. And then he starts narrating that how, because of Lord's association, because he gave me empowerment, I was able to achieve great things in my life. He said that when there was a Swayamvar ceremony of Draupadi, so many kings were there and so many kings wanted to win Princess Draupadi. But only I could succeed because I was given empowerment by the Supreme Lord. Then he said that how there was a Khandava forest was being burned and Indra attacked me. So I could vanquish Indra along with all other demigods. It's because of the power given to me by the Supreme Lord. How he defeated, how the Jarasandha was defeated, how even when they were in the forest, Durvasmani came to destroy them. That time also only with the help of Lord Sri Krishna we were saved. When we were incognito, Kauravas came to steal the cows of Virat. And when they were taking away the cows, I single-handedly fought with Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Duryodhan. So many Maharathis were there, but I could stand against them because I was bestowed these powers by the Supreme Lord, which we have to understand very much. Because whatever we do in the life, we need the empowerment. So even if a preacher thinks that I made a devotee, that itself is also a pride. Because we don't make devotees. It's by the Krishna's grace that person becomes a devotee. So many times now we are consciously, unconsciously proud of our this. And we do say that either this is my counselee or these are the devotees I have made. But the thing is that now who are we to make the devotees or make these things unless we are empowered by the Supreme Lord? So everything depends on the Supreme Lord's empowerment. As we have seen how Srila Prabhupada taught this lesson to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj when he was almost at the end, when he was in London. So in 1977, when Srila Prabhupada went to London, that's the time his health was so weak. But still his disciples thought to keep our spiritual master enthused is to always give him the reports of all the activities of the society going on, how his disciples are trying to fulfill his cherished desires and making his order life and soul, trying to distribute books all over the world. And Bhaktivedanta Swami, that time was Ghanashyam Prabhu. Now he was in library party, and along with other devotees, now he would distribute so many books. And he would regularly send reports to Srila Prabhupada. So that time, Tamara Krishna Maharaj, who was Srila Prabhupada's personal servant, he deliberately called Bhaktitirtha Maharaj into Prabhupada's room, and he was giving Srila Prabhupada the details of this course and how they distribute the books. And then Srila Prabhupada was so happy, and actually tears started coming from his eyes, and he said that your life is successful. So that became a talk of things in devotee circle, that how he is so much blessed by his spiritual master. When disciples see that his efforts are recognized by spiritual master, it satisfies his heart. He becomes very happy to see that he is able to make his spiritual master happy. So after that day, then the next day, again, Tamal Krishna Maharaj calls him to the room, and he tells Ghanashyam Prabhu to read his reports of preaching to Srila Prabhupada. But then what happens in the next day is Srila Prabhupada practically doesn't pay any attention to all the reports that he was reading. And when he was reading, he could realize that Prabhupada is not paying attention. He is just talking to other people, this and that. But then what happens is he started reading. In the middle, he can't stop. But he knew he can't continue also. And then suddenly Prabhupada makes that statement that we should always think that Krishna is the doer. Whatever we do is by his empowerment. And only by his causeless mercy we are able to do these things. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, now your time is over, better you go out of the room. But Bhaktitirtha Maharaj understands that how in the first day Srila Prabhupada lovingly accepted his service, gave him lot of appreciation, lot of love and care. And at the same time, he wanted to impress upon his mind that even though we are doing great, great things, we should never forget this thing in our life, that actually Krishna is the doer, we are not the doer. And disciples should always have this firm faith that Krishna is the controller and we are not the controllers. We are not the doers of our own achievements. So when a person understands and has this feeling that I am the fullest disciple at the feet of my spiritual master, is the best thing for any living entity, best thing for a disciple. Because when we have this attitude, there won't be any pride in the heart. This is the only way we can get out of the net of pride, net of ego, is always acting on behalf of our spiritual master and thinking that Krishna is giving me all this empowerment for performance of the service. Again, we can go back to Ramayana and see through the pastime of Lord Ram with Shabari, and we can understand that how she was always acting on behalf of her spiritual master. When Lord Ram along with Lakshman, they were searching for Mother Sita, and when they killed one demon who was actually a Gandharva, and that Gandharva tells Lord Ram and Krishna, Lord Ram and Lakshman, that nearby here in the forest there is a Shabari, and on order of her spiritual master she is waiting for you, so you should visit them, and from there you can go to Kishkinda. You have alliance with Sugriv, and Sugriv will help you to get back the Sita. So by that, Lord Ram goes to Pampa Sarovar where Shabari was staying in her hut, and her spiritual master was Matanga Muni. So that area was called Matangavan. And when Lord Ram comes to Chitrakoot, that's the time Matanga Muni goes to the spiritual world. But while going, he tells his disciple Shabari that you should wait here. Lord Ram will come in this area. I won't be there. But on my behalf, you should receive him. You should welcome him. So for 13 years and 1 month, she was every day waiting for Lord Ram to come. And every day she would make all arrangement for guest reception. And painstakingly, she had collected so many fruits to be offered for Lord Ram. So when Lord Ram comes, Shabari welcomes her very nicely. Then Lord Ram also inquires about her penances and all other things. So in reply to that, Shabari says that whatever penances I have performed in my life have matured today because I could see your divine form with my own eyes. At the same time, I have an opportunity to render some insignificant service to you. Then she says that kindly sit on this asana made of a grass. And then she offers varieties of fruits, which she takes one fruit from each variety and tests it. Because her intention was to see that all fruits are of a good quality, so that Lord Ram doesn't have to suffer from poor quality of the foods that is offered to him. And after that, Lord Ram immediately accepts her offerings, the fruits and vegetables that are offered to him. So here we see that how Lord Ram behaves when he goes out of Ayodhya. The first he meets with Guha, and Guha also offers him so many kinds of fruits, roots for Lord Ram's pleasure. But somehow that Lord Ram doesn't accept anything. He just accepts some food for his horses. But he somehow or other doesn't accept anything given by Guha. And we see that Guha and Shabari, they were of the same Nishad race. They were same from that same tribal community. So here Guha also equally with the love and affection was offering to Lord Ram. And Shabari was also offering to Lalam. For one, Lord Ram accepts, another doesn't accept, giving some excuse, some other doesn't accept it. Because the Acharya says that Guha was a devotee of Lord, whereas Shabari was devotee's devotee. So the Lord always give special affection and preference to those who are devotees' devotee. And that is why Lord Ram immediately accepts the offerings given to her, given by Shabari. And then after that, what happens is Shabari then takes Lord Ram to show where her spiritual master would stay, where was his altar, how nicely he was taking care of that, shows all these areas, and she then starts narrating the greatness of her preceptor. She says that how they were so austere and religious. Every day they would take bath in seven seas and come back before sunset. And when they were old, they were performing austerities, fast for a long time when they were very weak. In their mind, they call all seven seas, and here are these big, big ponds where the waters of seven seas is there. And whenever these great sages would desire to take bath in Ganga, Yamuna or other celestial rivers, those rivers would appear there and they could take bath in that. Here is the place they have lit the sacrificial fire, and this sacred fire is still going on. What are the flowers they offered in puja is not decayed, it's still fresh for so many years. And this is how she explains the so many things about greatness of her preceptors. And after that, then she says, is now my heart is longing to attain the lotus feet of my spiritual master. So I had done what I was supposed to do. And I have shown you what I am supposed to show you. So if you permit, then I will end my life and I can go and resume my service to my preceptors. So immediately Lord Ram gives permission. And then Shabari collects all dried sticks enough to burn her body. And with her power of yoga, she ignites the fire. And right in front of Lord Ram, she ends her life. So what we can learn from her life is this is the greatness of serving great acharyas. Now here, she was born of a low caste. She had no right to perform any yajnas, no right to study any great scriptures. But what was her main qualification because of which she was recipient of bestowing divine form of Lord Ram to get his favors, get his mercy? The only reason is she was faithfully performing service to her spiritual master without any tinge of pride. Whatever great austerity she did, she always thought she is acting on behalf of her spiritual master. And then we have seen, this is the main thing is service that we do to our preceptor that makes us eligible, no matter how disqualifications, how shortcomings we may have. Another thing is, we learn from her lessons is that wherever the great acharyas reside, that place becomes a sacred place. That's why we have, wherever Srila Prabhupada stayed, in his rooms, whether in Bombay, Calcutta, Mayapur, or Vrindavan, now we have preserved all his paraphernalia, and all those places are great inspirations for us. By their divine presence, they have made that places holy. At the same time, our disciples should always glorify the greatness of one's spiritual master. What are the big things he has done? That's why we always glorify how Srila Prabhupada has taken so much risks to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And because of that, so many of us were benefited. And the aspiration of a disciple is always to attain his service. Whenever a disciple leaves his body, he would like to again go back and resume the service to one's spiritual master. So when person has got this kind of consciousness, that is, as Srila Prabhupada would always say, that I am simply a postman. Now here he is such a great acharya, and he could write so many books, he could give import of all Vedic scriptures to us in such a clear, lucid language, and establish the whole mission worldwide. But his consciousness was, I am simply a postman. Now, who is simply a common, ordinary person? A postman may give you a big check of crores of rupees, but he just takes it from one person and gives it to another person. And he never takes credit of giving that check to others. So similarly, when we have this thing in the mind, that firm faith that we are not the doers, Krishna is a doer, then only we can able to deal with this ego. Because what separates us from the Supreme Lord is the false ego the living entity has. And we have seen how this false ego is so powerful that it will somehow or other makes us believe what we are doing is correct. and completely blocks our progress towards the spiritual life. And what are the ways we can get it out is, we can always remember this verse spoken by Arjuna, that how all these big empowerments that we are able to do is because of the power given to us by the Supreme Lord. Sri Prabhupada makes this statement in the purport. The first line he writes is the quoting the shloka of Bhagavad Gita. The anyone specifically powerful and opulent in wealth, strength, beauty, knowledge, and all that is material desirable is to be considered but a product of an insignificant portion of complete whole of my energy. So where Lord is saying that actually I am giving empowerment to a living entity. But a false ego makes us think that we are the doers of our life and we can control our lives. And we have seen those who had that mentality, how they get destroyed by the energy of the Supreme Lord. All the demons, they were with Ravana, and Ravana himself along with his brothers, they had extraordinary powers. But still, because of this defect of false pride in the heart, they were totally annihilated. So that's why now we had to deal with this problem in our life. That what's our right consciousness for a living entity is to always remember that he has to be always empowered by the Supreme Lord to do great things. And whenever he doing any great things, all credit goes to one's spiritual master. Because he is helping us to get the empowerment by the Supreme Lord. So I'll end here. So are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, my humble obeisances onto your lotus feet. I have got one question, Prabhuji, that while offering food to Lord, it should not be means when Shabri she has tasted first of all that, and then offered to Ram. But we should not taste it before offering. So how is it?
So the thing is, the Shabri had achieved that state after performing austerities for so many years. It's not that she just became devotee and started disregarding the scripture rules and regulations. If somebody wants to take excuse for that, then he has to be first qualified for that. We have to listen that Shabri was of such a mature state of her devotional life. Now she was such a great advance. And what was her consciousness is, even if I suffer in the hell because of offering this food, which is technically flawed, to Lord Ram, but Lord Ram should not have any inconvenience. So suppose by mistake I gave him raw fruit or bitter fruit, then Lord Ram will suffer. So let me better taste that, so that Lord Ram is not suffered. But for doing that, even if I had to go hell, I don't care for that. So that was her consciousness, and that's what was accepted by Lord Ram. He immediately accepted her feelings, what's her consciousness. So as far as we are concerned, we have to strictly follow all rules and regulations, so that by following this Vaidhi Bhakti, maybe we may be able to come up to that stage where Lord may accept the offering we gave it to him, even if there are so many flaws or if it was not properly done. So that's why we have to understand is what was the greatness of Shabri. She had that consciousness and she was always had that I'm acting on behalf of my spiritual master. And because she was a devotee, she could attract the attention of the Supreme Lord. It's like it is said it, like one should remember the Supreme Lord at the time of his death. And here is the Supreme Lord standing right in front of her when she is departing. And he is giving her permission, go back and resume your service to your spiritual master. Okay? My question is, it is bad to fight with material people who talk wrong things about Krishna, like Arjuna did. I normally get very angry with these people at the beginning, and after some time I feel sorry for them, and I feel bad that I have felt angry. Yeah, it's there, like when the Supreme Lord or his devotees are mistreated, naturally anger will come in the heart. The why anger comes? Because we love the Supreme Lord, we love his devotees. It's natural that anger will come. Let's say I love him, and if somebody attacks him, I will immediately protect him. I will immediately come up. But if my love is shallow, I don't care. Many times, so if I'm going out and if there is some attack on unknown person, I may not even notice. But if there is attack on person who is close to me, I will be first person to defend. So it's quite natural that when Lord or his devotees are criticized or attacked, we feel anger. But the thing is, we have to see that in Kali Yuga, the situation is so worst that people doesn't have proper knowledge. So the best way to deal with the situation is to act in a such a way that you are able to convert the hearts of these envious people. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was performing his Leela in Navadvip, even those times also there were so many non-believers, atheistic people who would criticize devotees, who would condemn the devotees. But then how Srivas Thakur, he acted in this, like when this, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would perform Harinam Sankirtan in the Srivas Thakur's house, only devotees were allowed, others were not allowed. So those who were envious people wanted to prove that these people are trying to do so many bad things in that. So what they did is they gathered all inauspicious paraphernalia and kept in front of Srivas' house so that to discredit him. But what Srivas did, when Srivas saw all these things, he called all his neighbors and told him that actually I am fallen person. So this is how the devotee, he takes the humble position. And then we can see when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes sannyas, all those peoples who once upon a time criticized him, they felt bad. They felt that we never recognize Nimai. He was such an exalted person. So when we act with this intention that in Kali Yuga, because of ignorance, practically everybody would do this kind of things. So the devotee acts in such a intelligent way, by that his behavior, he is able to change the heart of these people. And that's the proper way we should deal with that. So we'll end here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktavrinda ki.